Unfortunately, I don't. When I was making my decision about what I was going to preach on this morning, I am going to talk about the gospel reading and a little. I'll touch on the other two readings. But I do kind of want to say at the outset that that Proverbs 31 reading that is so common, I think, in a lot of households and a lot of places, requires a lot of discussion and explanation. I think all too often in our society, at least in a lot of our Christian kind of context, we see and hear that passage and kind of treat it as if that is the expectation of all the women around us or of a good wife or something like that. And we live in much different times now. And I don't even think at the beginning, in the book of Proverbs, that passage itself was meant to be just a description of how we should make everything work in our lives. Because it's an ideal that is impossible for us to relate or to accomplish. And on top of that, it's an ideal from a very different time and a very different culture. And I just say that because I know we live in a world where it is very difficult for us still to this day to find a way of equity and parity and balance between the way in which the different sexes and genders are treated in our society. And I feel like it would be, I need to at least speak to that briefly, even though I can't spend my whole, or I decided not to spend my whole time talking about that. We can talk as much as you like after the service or at another time if you want. But the piece of this that I do want to point to and draw out is as you've heard me say before, I get very nervous when we get to passages like Proverbs 31, like the different passages in James that we've been reading the last few weeks. Because if you take it just as it sounds, it really does sound like here's a list of things you ought to do. And if you do these things, you're a good person and God will love you and God will think you're a good person. And if you don't do these things, well, I don't know. Maybe the opposite. And that's not how our gospel works. That's not who God is. That's not what God has taught us through the whole corpus of Scripture. And that's not what Jesus came to bring into this world in his life and his death and his resurrection. I think that much more is spoken to in our gospel reading, which is why I want to talk about that mainly today. Because you have kind of, if you remember, if you were here last week, you heard the gospel reading about Peter's declaration and denial of Jesus, or not denial, but rebuke of Jesus, where Jesus says, "Who do you say that I am?" And Peter says, "You're the Messiah, right? You're the Christ." And then Jesus tells them what he's going to do, that he's going to come, that he's going to be betrayed, and that he's going to be killed, and on the third day rise again. And Peter kind of pulls him aside and says, "That can't be right. That's not what the Messiah does." And Jesus says, "Get behind me, Satan." And so a couple chapters later, when you have this passage where Jesus basically has the same teaching, notice what the disciples do after that. But they did not understand what he was saying, and they were afraid to ask him. I guess they learned their lesson, right? They're like, "We're just going to let that sit." But the reality is the disciples, even the people that walked with Jesus all this time, that were taught by him, that were instructed by him, that were pulled aside and given kind of the inside discussions about all the confusing and difficult things he taught, they still didn't understand what he was talking about. They were so caught up in the idea of who the Messiah was supposed to be and what that meant they ought to be, that they couldn't see what Jesus was actually doing and teaching and bringing into this world. And I don't want us to make that same mistake 2,000 years later. Because in my experience, and if you're anything like me, we get caught up way too much in this discussion that is handled kind of off stage, right? They get to where they're going, and Jesus says, "What were you talking about while we were walking here?" And they don't want to say anything, and they're embarrassed, and they just kind of look down at their feet, I'm imagining in my head. And it says, because they were arguing about which one of them was the greatest. They were talking about and comparing the different deeds and acts and beliefs and accolades of one another and deciding which one of us is the most important disciple, because that's really what's important. We want to get ahead. We want to be the best. We want to be at the front of the line. We don't want to be at the end. And Jesus calls and he addresses this. And his response is, whoever wants to be first should be last, and whoever is last will be first. He reverses the entire thing. And now, I don't think he does that in order to, like, give us a new rule that, oh, what we want to do is be the worst. I just don't think that's what Jesus is saying, right? What Jesus is teaching us is that This whole way in which we rank and order ourselves, both within ourselves and in our society and around us, is not what the kingdom of God is about. It's not what we're called to be or to do. It's not how we're called to live. And if you remember, in this 12 is still Judas, right? The one who is going to betray Jesus. He's still among this group. At every stage, Jesus addresses and handles his disciples equally. He calls them and he decides different things for them, right? Sometimes he takes Peter, James, and John up, you know, onto the mountain separately. Sometimes he visits with others, and sometimes he's in different places and different conversations with all different kinds of his disciples. It would be easy for us to look and try to create a hierarchy ourselves. It's the first thing the church did, right? After Jesus' ascension, right? Peter, the rock on whom Jesus is going to build his church, becomes the kind of first bishop of Jerusalem. And from there, we continue in the hierarchy that our church has kind of held onto for 2,000 years. But in the midst of that, we need to remember that that's not really the way God ordered things. Yes, he pointed to Peter and said, you know, I'm going to build my church on you. But I think a lot of that, more of that, had to do with the fact that Peter was the one that was the most vocal about making and made the most mistakes kind of publicly in front of the rest of the disciples. I think it's entirely possible that Jesus looked at him and said, hey, look, even though you keep making mistake after mistake, that's not what this is about. Because I'm going to use you. You're going to be you are my child, and I'm going to call you into what I have in store for you in this world. And that's what God's promise is for all of us. God calls us into this world, like that opening or that song of praise we sang. I always worry about it sounding too hokey. Like what I'm saying is, like, each of you is your own special little snowflake, you know. And it's true though. I'm really struggling with that one. But throughout the whole thing, you were created to be you. God didn't want a whole bunch of people that look just the same. He made us all different. I mean, the point of letting us know that he knows us all by name, he knows the very hairs on our heads. He looks at you, he looks at me, and he says, you are my children, and I love you. I'm so excited to walk with you and to walk about in this world with you and to see and to watch you come into yourself and to be more and more who God has created you to be, that this world might be changed and renewed because you have lived in it. These comparisons are not helpful for us, even though we do them all the time, even though it's so tempting to look at the people around us and say, I wish I was more like that person because they seem so holy and so pious that, like, you know, it's so easy for them. Faith comes so easy for them, right? It's so easy for them to believe, and I have all these doubts and I have all these questions. Why can't I be more like them? You know, we see someone that's really struggling, that's having a terrible time, and that is just kind of always just tripping over themselves, right? They just can't, for whatever reason, kind of get their footing. And we say, oh, well, I feel bad for them, I have compassion for them, but I'm really glad I'm able to kind of hold it together a little bit better than that. I hope that's not your experience, but I know that's something I've experienced. I'm not proud of it. It's just a part of the reality that it's very hard for me to live in this world and look around and not start comparing myself to the people around me. And if I'm really honest, what it really boils down to is I'm basically asking myself, am I the greatest? I mean, I know I'm not, but maybe I could be a little more great than I was yesterday. Maybe I could get a couple notches ahead. Get a little higher than someone else around me. But the problem is you've got to step on someone else to get up higher in that system. You've got to knock someone else down if you want that place. Any of the disciples who want to be first or want to be the greatest have to do that at the expense of all the others that are there. And that's just simply not what God is calling us into. Because the reality is that what you and I, what we bring into this world is different and cannot be compared. And this is why I struggle a lot. This is one of the reasons I struggle a lot, and you hear me talk pretty negatively about the prosperity gospel, right? The idea that if you just do all the right things, you'll be blessed and you'll be rich and you won't have to worry about anything. Because the reality is you all have gifts. You all have incredible gifts. And the trouble is we live in a world that right now values some gifts more than others. You might have an incredible gift of art, but unless you happen to fit right into where society wants you to be, chances are you're going to have a lot harder time getting ahead in this world than someone who's really good at finance or is really good at predicting where the market's going to go, or is really excellent managing real estate. The people who are ahead in our society have gotten there because for a lot of different reasons. And we're somewhere in the middle, right? We're always going to find someone that we can look at and feel like we are ahead of. And we're always going to find someone we can look at and feel like we're behind. And if that's what governs and drives us, yeah, it might drive us to work harder, to get a better job, to make more money, to have more stuff. It might do that. And that's, I don't really want to put a value judgment like that's bad or that's worse. It is what it is. I don't fault anyone for wanting to get ahead in this society, for wanting to do well and to make good money and to have things and to provide for their kids and to not be stressed out about it, right? I get that. I guess what I'm trying to speak to is that I know people that make a very modest amount of money and are way more content, way more joyful, and way more at peace with where they are and who they are in this world than people that make hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions of dollars a year. In fact, not to get too much into the hierarchy of it, I think I've probably met more people that live a modest life that are happier than the people who have the most around me. And again, I'm not saying that's the rule. I'm not saying you can't have a lot and be at peace and be comfortable with where you are. I'm just saying that what I hope we can do is find a way in which to realize that we are greatly blessed. We have incredible opportunities that have been before us. We have a parish here that is able to care for one another, a place where we can worship, a roof over our head where the air conditioning works most of the time. Where we can have food, right? Where we can work into our budget to have food for 100 people to come and eat and to be together, for the kids to play, and for us to enjoy one another's company. We have tremendous blessings. As much as we struggle with the finances and as much as I stress out about all the different things that go into kind of organizing and running a church this size, we are incredibly blessed. I know I make much less than most of the people that I see and spend time with. But I know I'm incredibly blessed. I have so much. In fact, I struggle mostly with the fact that I keep acquiring more things than I definitely need. And I don't know where you fall in that. I don't know where you find yourself. But I would guess that at least once in a while, if not all the time, you wrestle with this very idea of where you fit in society, where you fit in the hierarchy of life. And that's unfortunately just a reality of living in this world. And so what I offer is that in this place, in this world, what God has been and is continuing and will continue to create is a place where this is not, that hierarchy is not what defines us. It's not where we find our value. It's not where we find our worth. Because our worth and our value comes in being children of God, first and foremost. And that is what you are. And God has created you and called you into new life, into resurrection, into joy, and into peace. And for each and every one of us, that will look a little different because we have different gifts and we have different things to offer this world. And what my desire is in standing here and in encouraging you and inviting you to this table is that week in and week out, day in and day out, each of us would learn a little bit better to understand what we have been created to do. What God has put in our hearts that drives us and makes us passionate. The ways in which we can bring healing to this world and new life to this world. Wholeness through our gifts. Because when that's our measure, when that's our rubric, when we start talking about how do we heal the brokenness of ourselves, of our society, and of this world, our gifts start to have different value than the world might value them. All of a sudden, a listening ear is useful for something a little bit more than being a therapist, right? All of a sudden, hands that can lift and work and serve are useful for more than just someone who is a builder or who is a contractor. All of a sudden, our minds and the way in which they think and the way in which they work in this world are useful for more than whatever our job asks us to do with them. We learn what it means to live and to serve, to care and to love. We live into that, and we understand that we have been loved and cherished and restored and renewed and forgiven by our God. And out of that forgiveness and love, we are able to go into this world and to share that. I, for one, can speak to the fact that the reason that, like, everything and all the ability I have to love the people in my life, to love you all, to love the people I encounter in this world, it all starts with the work God has done helping me love myself, which has been a hard road, harder than I ever thought it would be. And as I get better about that, as I start to understand more and more what love looks like, as I stop worrying about where I fit in the hierarchy, when I stop worrying about whether I'm greater or less or the greatest or the least, as I start getting more and more comfortable in my own skin and who God has created me to be, I'm able to go into this world in confidence. Not that the world is always going to value everything that I have to offer, but knowing that what God has given me, this world needs, and what God has given you, this world needs. And so I beg you not to try to be someone else, not to try to be someone different, but to day in and day out just learn more and more how to love yourself and how to be more and more who God has created you to be, so that as you live in this world, your gifts can flourish and be used by God and ministered to the people you encounter. And if there's one thing I want for this place, for this church, for this congregation, it's that. I want us to have a place where we can come and understand that wherever we are, whatever we're wrestling with, as high or as low as we feel, you have a home here and you are welcome here. And you don't have to have it all together to walk in these doors. In fact, I'll be suspicious of you if you have it all together when you walk in these doors. We can be messy here. We can struggle and make mistakes here, because that's not what you're evaluated by in this place and at this table. That's not what makes you who you are. It's God's love that makes you who you are, and it is offered to all of us more than we can ask or imagine, more than we can understand. And I beg and invite you to live into that here in this place and out in that world as much as you can, but I know how hard it is to do out in that world. And so may you gather strength and courage in this place and at this table. May God's strength go with you and be with you wherever you go. And may you learn every day to love yourself and to live more and more into who God has created you to be. So that when we're walking along the way, our debate isn't about who is the greatest, but our discussion can be about rejoicing in the ways in which we were able to help and serve this world and one another. Amen.